So welcome everybody, and near and far in these slightly unprecedented times. I think just before we start, obviously this talk is in lieu of the last talk that we would normally be giving for the Shoboan class before we break for Easter. So I just wanted to say a couple of things, the usual things really. For those who have been applying themselves in practice over the term, which hopefully is all of us, don't forget to take a little bit of time off over Easter. It's important as well. And I think, you know, Easter is still a family time. And I think more than ever, it's important because we are living through unusual times that we remember our families and those loved ones who are close to us, and that this is a time now that we can't go out or quite as much, we can reach out still and make contact with those around us, and particularly not just for ourselves but for the benefit of them as well. People are very frightened now, and there's a lot of anxiety around as well. And, you know, we have a bodhisattva duty upon us to be there as part of the groups that we belong to provide support. That's part of the three refuges as well, the third refuge being the community side of things. And that's very important. So even though we are taking time off perhaps formal practice such as Zazen, and we can put the books to one side, it gives us an opportunity to, as I say, sort of reach out a little bit more and make contact. And to take us into that, as Venerable Myokun said, we're having a passage from the Rinzai Roku, the record of Rinzai. Obviously, he is the founder of our lineage. Hello?
Sorry, if people could keep themselves muted, or Martin, mute them, because otherwise we're going to get background things. If everybody can make sure they stay muted, otherwise it switches to them. I think that's iPhone 3. I think it might be okay. Michael and Catherine. You need to mute your phone, please.
Let me just... How do I mute all? Okay.
Ghost participant and mute. And mute, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to... Right, okay. So I've muted you, but you can unmute yourselves for later. Okay, so this is the passage 15b. Followers of the way, do you want to attain this Dharma? Then it is indeed necessary to become a man who has nothing further to seek. Weakness and complacency make one incapable of it, just as thin buttermilk cannot be kept in a cracked pot. To become a great vessel, it is important not to put into it any errors of others. If one is one's own master everywhere, then wherever one stands, all is truth. Do not take in everything that happens to come along. In a moment of doubt, Mara enters the heart, as did the demon of birth and death in the case of the doubting bodhisattva. Just put your heart at rest and seek nothing outside. When things come towards you, look at them clearly. Have faith in the one who is functioning at this moment, and all things of themselves become empty. Followers of the way, and obviously as Master Rinzai was of course addressing his monks, but those followers of the way are all those in his lineage too, and so that includes us. And important to remember what that term way actually means. This Rinzai, of course, is the Japanese term for Lin Chi, which was his Chinese name. And Zen was deeply influenced by Chinese thought, and in particular, Taoism. And Tao is the word that quite often in the early Zen, early Chan teachings, was often used synonymously for Dharma. So when he says followers of the way, do you want to attain this Dharma? He's actually using that term Dharma in this way. He's referring to the Tao, or what in Chinese it was known as the Tao. And if we remember that Dharma has a number of meanings, Buddha Dharma means specifically the Buddha's teachings. But the Dharma itself, often translated into English as the law, which sounds a bit legalistic to perhaps to our ears. But actually what it means is the inherent nature of things. If we know that term Buddha nature, and we know that that term Buddha nature is in all living things, and the term Dharma or Dharma nature, if you like, is normally reserved for the non-living things. However, that's not to think, therefore, that there are two Dharmas. There are not. There is just the Dharma. There is just nature or nature. It's just that one is in living things and the other is in the non-living things. But in fact, it's always the same nature that fundamentally underlies and is the ground of being of all things anyway. And so what is this nature? What is this way? And again, the notion of a way has a suggestion of movement along it. One travels along the way. And we talk of the Buddha's path, don't we? And we talk of a journey. You know, if you think of the 10 bull herding pictures, the book itself, Venerable Myokyo's book, is called A Spiritual Journey. And so we have this notion of traveling along. And if we're moving along, then what we are experiencing is everything in flux. And this represents the world in which we live, because the world in which we live is changing. There are no certainties. That is the norm. When we think there are certainties, that is when our perception of the world in which we live has become partial. Master Rinzai says in another place, in one of his sermons, that one of the errors that his students made was that they would leave one home in order to go to another. And what he meant by this is that the term "leaver of home" was a phrase used for the monks and the nuns in the Buddha's Sangha. They were called leavers of home because they left the family group in order to join the Sangha. But he said what people did is that they would leave one home, their birthplace, but then as quickly as possible, wherever they went to, they grabbed hold of a whole bunch of other things and would call that home. It might be the robe and the bowl. It might be a particular lifestyle, whatever. It doesn't really matter. But the point is, what Master Rinzai is pointing out is that whilst there is still the notion of I in the heart, I am always trying to identify with something. And therefore I grasp. I want to make permanent because I am insubstantial. Fundamentally, even I am subject to change. There is nothing in us. This is the Buddha's teaching of the five skandhas. There is nothing in us that lasts. We are always subject to change. And that is a truth that we constantly have to remember and constantly have to re-experience. And when we suffer, it is because we have forgotten that. We have stopped realizing it. Ajahn Chah, the great teacher of Venerable Sumedho, Ajahn Sumedho, said in an interview, he says, when the bhikkhu realizes that everything, but everything is subject to change, then his heart is at peace. Which sounds like a remarkable statement to actually make, but this is what Master Rinzai is pointing to when he says, do you want to attain this Dharma? It's actually a bit of a trick, because that attain still for I has that promise of somehow getting somewhere and then rather like the fairy tale, happy ever after. The truth is in life, there is no happy ever after. There is happiness, but it's not forever. And so the Buddhist way is not to promise a permanent final resting place. What it is to look inwards and realize and to discover the inner strength that can bear this constant turning of the wheel, this constant turning of the wheel of coming to be and ceasing to be, coming to be and ceasing to be, and therefore is no longer afraid of it. And this is what Ajahn Chah was pointing to when he said, when the bhikkhu's heart truly realizes that all things are subject to change, his heart is at peace. Because once we have confidence, once we have the faith in that spiritual strength, then what is there to be afraid of, really? So, followers of the way, do you want to attain this Dharma? Then it is indeed necessary to become a man who has nothing further to seek. And this man who has nothing further to seek is a standard and very common euphemism that Master Rinzai did. He has a number of sayings that really identify that you are listening to Rinzai, and this is one of them. He often talks about this man who has nothing further to seek. And we shouldn't make the mistake of thinking that this man is a man that belongs to the future or a woman that belongs to the future. This is not your future self. Anyone who thinks, oh, well, very well for Master Rinzai to say these things, but to be put, you know, this is an attainment for a future life or something like that. No, Master Rinzai is talking about somebody or someone who is in the room with you right now, but because of the sticky attachments of I, cannot be realized, cannot be seen at this moment. But that one is always there with us, no matter whether we're standing in the middle of a supermarket queue waiting to get in with 2 meters apart, or whether we are standing alone on the mountain peak and thinking that there's no one with us. This man who has nothing further to seek is always there. This is the birthright. So if we, a good example of this, of course, is someone like Bodhidharma. If we remember the story of Bodhidharma, traveled, he was the 28th Indian patriarch and the first Chinese, and he was handed the succession from Hanyatara. And at that time in India, there was a persecution. And so Bodhidharma had to flee, and he did. And he made his way to China, and then he settled down. But in fact, the Chinese emperor himself was a Buddhist. And wanted to meet Bodhidharma, and so summoned him. And there he had the famous audience where the emperor, having had recited all his attainments, how many monasteries he'd had founded, how many translations he had paid for, how many permissions he had granted in order that people could leave their family home, which was a big thing in those days, and join the Sangha. And how much merit had he actually accumulated? Now, Bodhidharma could have taken the very standard line, because he could have told the emperor what he wanted to hear, which is, oh, boundless merit, oh, great emperor. That's what he wanted to hear. And in a way, he would have been perfectly justified to do that, because the concept of performance of meritorious acts and the accumulation of merit and it leading to a beneficial future incarnation. This is all standard Buddhist teaching. There is nothing that goes against the scripture in any of that. So the emperor was actually quite right. It was a perfectly sound question from a Buddhistic point of view. But Bodhidharma could see that the emperor was grasping at something. He was grasping at that future life, and therefore was just simply trying to leave one home in order to attain a safer home. You know, he was already emperor, but he wanted either to maintain that life in a future incarnation, or perhaps even become a god in the next one. Maybe that was his ambition. And Bodhidharma realized that in fact he was storing up trouble for himself, that actually that ambition would hurt him. And Bodhidharma, being the good bodhisattva that he was, did his best to disabuse the emperor. And so he replied, nothing, no merit whatsoever. Now, just think of the position. There is Bodhidharma, a monk, just a monk, and here is the emperor of China and all its lands. I mean, it would cost nothing for the emperor to call his executioner to come forward. And Bodhidharma knows that. And yet he still spoke the truth. Why? Because Bodhidharma had truly realized that man who has nothing further to seek. He didn't seek to save his own neck. He didn't seek to curry favor. He didn't seek in order to gain merit for himself or anything for himself. He was prepared in that moment to let everything go, absolutely everything go. And that is the strength of the man who has nothing further to seek. Rinzai goes on. Weakness and complacency make one incapable of it. Just as thin buttermilk cannot be kept in a cracked pot. To become a great vessel, it is important not to put into it any errors of others. So, this weakness and complacency make one incapable of it, just as thin buttermilk cannot be kept in a cracked pot. And so here we have the, Master Rinzai conjures up this vessel, which is obviously the usefulness of the vessel comes from its ability to contain whatever it is that's actually put into it. A vessel that's cracked and leaking, it really is no good, obviously. That sort of vessel gets thrown away very quickly. And what Master Rinzai is pointing to is that we too are vessels. We too also need to develop that strength so that we can contain. And what is it that we're containing? Well, obviously what we are learning to contain are those three fires, the three fires of greed, hatred, or aversion, that includes fear, and delusion. And why is it that we have to contain those things? Because the wanting, that grasping, which we talked about earlier, and also its corollary, the fear, the pushing away, those two narrow the ability to be able to see clearly. If you think about it, for example, that if you can, just as a sort of a thought experiment, just cast your mind back to the last time that you really wanted something. You know, maybe it's been quite recently, maybe you've been feeling a bit stir crazy, and what you really wanted to was actually go outside, and you know how that pressure builds up on the inside. You can feel it in the body as it begins to build up, and what happens, we become fidgety, we start agitated. We want to move around. We start pacing. We try to settle ourselves down. Perhaps I pick up a book and think I'll read a book. But hardly 30 seconds goes by. We put the book down and then we sort of switch on the telly. But now I'm going through the 400 channels and there's nothing there that pleases me at all. And so I look at Netflix. But no, I'm not in the mood for that. So perhaps I should go and do, I don't know, a bit of gardening or whatever. And I do a bit of gardening, but I'm finding this all too much. And I think, right, I've got to go out. And so I go out and then I go for a walk. And I think what I really want is to have a coffee. I miss a little bit of sort of the ordinary everyday, the things that we used to do and that we took for granted. Just go and get myself a coffee. And I finally see a little, because Starbucks is closed here in London. I don't know where you are. And so is Costa, and so is Cafe Nero. But occasionally you might just come across one of those little independent coffee shops. And you think, yes, I just remember. And you rush around the corner and there's a queue of 20 people and they're only allowing one in at a time. And you think, oh, damn. And there's always this. And this is, there's always that dissatisfactoriness. With that agitation, but we think it comes from the outside. We think it's because we're stuck inside. I have the thought, I'm stuck inside. But really, what are we stuck inside? We're stuck inside the thought of being stuck inside. That's where we're really stuck inside. We're not stuck inside the house at all. We're just in the house. Or we're in the garden. Or we're in the room. You can only be in one place at a time anyway. And when we go out, what do? We give rise to all sorts of fantasies and, what, as Venerable Myokyoni used to call it, my fancies. which we're always chasing after and looking into the future. And they always promise fulfillment. This is the very nature of desire. This is the whole point of the Buddha's diagnosis in the Four Noble Truths, that whilst the desire possesses us, and remember, it's always that way round, and it's the same for a fear as well, whenever a desire possesses us, as long as it remains unfulfilled, then its attainment always promises fulfillment. It doesn't matter what the object is, whether it's the right job, the right relationship, the right status, being in the right place, or even just something simple like a cup of coffee. Whilst it's still there, yet to be fulfilled, then its promise is always one of fulfillment. Oh, if only, if only. And again, I remember, I mean, I've told this story before, but that first session that I went on at Sayers Common, there we were, too many of us for the beds, and so half a dozen of us were sort of camping out, as it were, in the Zendo. And because of that, we had our sleeping bags, and we were given a little room, our own little community room for the six of us. And there we had all our stuff and we could go. Now, you know, you've all been on sessions and you know that they're tough. There's no talking, there's no distractions, and so forth. There's no reading or whatever. It's hard, and we're sitting 8 or 9 hours Zazen a day. So it's quite tough on physically and mentally as well. And so naturally that begins to build, that agitation begins to naturally build. And as we do so, we begin to look for pressure valves, for something to look forward to. It's always in the future. Remember, desire has to project something into the future in order for it to be fulfilled. That is always how it works. And then I came in after a very substantial lunch, because the nuns always cooked very plentifully for us, walked into that little community room. And just as I walked in, out of the corner of my eye, I saw someone sitting in the corner just move and hide something very quickly. So naturally, I slew around to have a look. You know, and when he saw I was nobody of importance, out he brought that Cadbury's chocolate whisper bar and proceeded to eat it. And it was just, you know, talk about heart-to-heart transmission. It was one of those moments. I looked in his eyes, he looked in mine, and we both knew what the other person was thinking. And it's this, because quite simply, you know, being on a session is hard. We living in denial of speaking and the pleasures and all the things that I usually like to do to disport myself with, all of those have gone. And on top of that, there's the physical exertion of the sitting as well, and the atmosphere. I just need this one thing, just this one thing, that little treat to look forward to that makes the rest of the day possible. And I knew that because at the time I was a smoker. And I treated cigarettes in exactly the same way. I would, at the last minute, sort of puff away on one of my roll-ups. And then as soon as I was, just as we were coming to the end, I would think, oh, I can go and smoke in a moment. And then I would dash outside and have another cigarette afterwards. And that was, but really looking at it, you know, to be honest, it wasn't a nicotine addiction. Just as for him, it wasn't, there's no addiction to chocolate either. It was the thought. What we were imprisoned by was this belief that I must have it. I must have it. And the pity of that is that when life comes and takes those things away, then we grieve. Because I am convinced, that this is the reason I grieve, because I am convinced I cannot live without. And this is why the practice of renunciation is central. In Buddhist practice, it is not because we're all pious and puritanical and we think that wanting worldly things are so terrible. They're not at all. Things are just what they are. The Buddha's diagnosis very clearly does not place the blame on the world. It places the source of the problem on the grasping of the heart. And those self-beliefs, those beliefs that I cannot live without, or I must have. And then the world comes along and says, just takes those things away. What then? What then? This is the moment when the man who has nothing further to seek, that one, man or woman, it's not actually, it's neither one nor the other, it's both or neither, but the one who has nothing further to seek, this is that moment when that one can, for the first time, be realized. Because suddenly it stands up. Suddenly it's there. I remember hearing a talk, I think, can't remember whether it was last year or the year before, one of the bhikkhus from Amravati was speaking, Ajahn Amaro. Actually, he's the abbot now, in fact. And he said, even when people are saying, I can't bear this anymore, they are bearing it. In that moment of saying, I cannot stand this, we are standing in it. There it is. It's just a fact. The point is, what we are being hurt by is that clinging to that self-belief. And this is why in our practice is to empty out the heart of all these things. This is what that crackpot is. That crackpot, that leakiness, as Master Dai called it, again in the Swampland Flowers, those of you who have read them, will know that in one place Master Dai himself says, if you want power, or if you want strength, if you want this strength, this spiritual strength we've been talking about, first conserve it. Do not allow all the energy to escape, all the power to escape into this and that, and this thought and that thought, but really to hold it together. And now at our particular time, we have a good reason to practice, not only for ourselves, but again, for the benefit of all those around us as well. And all of us, if we've chanted the four Bodhisattva vows, then we have taken those vows, and those vows are real. They mean something. And what they mean is that we can be of service to others. Not I being of service. I cannot do that because all I do is to infect everybody else with my own wanting and my own fear. But in emptying out the heart, in that true laying down of the heart, this is that mushin, the empty heart that is so so fated in Zen, in all the teachings, and in all the Zen canon. That empty heart, that is the one that stays. That is the one that is the immovable spot underneath the Bodhi tree, where when the Buddha made that final vow to sit down and to either die in the process or to awaken to the truth of the human situation and the human condition of suffering. Do not fall for one's own self misbeliefs. Talk about fake news. This is the ultimate fake news. These are the things I tell myself every single day. I must, I must, I must. And then the world comes along and says, no. And then what? We cry a few tears, but then something is still there. This is where our faith has to be in this that's most important. The Master Tore says in The Inexhaustible Lamp, when he talks about the three requirements for Zen, which I know you all know about, that great root of faith, the great ball of doubt, and the fierce determination as well. That great root of faith is the root of faith in the Buddha nature, that we are born with it. It is with us every single step of the way, and we can never be parted from it. As long as this being is alive, it forms our foundation and can be drawn on, and it informs us. Again, as Venerable Myokyoni used to say of the Buddha nature, it is the informing information. That informing information is the Tao, is the way, it is the way of living in this moment. It knows just how to respond, but it can only be heard if those self-beliefs and those that attachment to I has been at least to some extent emptied out. And this is why this is the work that's most important to us now. And if there's any message that to really give, to take us into our Easter period, which is the period of both renewal, both in the Christian sense, and also rebirth, because it's the Buddha's birthday as well on the 8th, then let it be this, that the most powerful talisman, if you like, that the Zen school has is this empty heart. And to that practice of emptying out the heart is always central with us, and to return to it, and to return, and do not get sidetracked by, oh, my progress, and whether it's worth it, and there are other things, just to really always come back to it. With that, we can fulfill everything, not only for ourselves, but also for the sake of all sentient beings. Okay, well, I think I've spoken enough, so I'll leave it there for now.